be prepared for some emotions. You go from naturally like some excitement, oh, I sold and it was good and we accomplished something, to sort of another emotion, which is like, oh man, you know, I sold and it's no longer like, it's no longer my thing.
Yeah.
And I got this boss now I got to call and, you know, do a conference call with about the budget. You know, you never had to do that before. So
yeah,
it's emotional. I think you got to kind of be ready to kind of ride those waves.
Welcome to the Before You Buy or Sell a Business podcast, where we help buyers and sellers learn more about the acquisition process, discuss recent transactions, and stay up to date on the latest news in the market. Here's your host, Jared Johnson.
All right. So excited today on the podcast. I have August Felker. So, you know, I'm great to have you on today. You bring a little bit of a different flavor than what we're sometimes used to. So you've actually been in the seat of buying businesses, and then now you actually support those that are looking to buy a business or those that own businesses. So glad to have you on. Thank you.
Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So maybe we'll kind of jump into your background. I believe maybe you grew up in the St. Louis area.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, walk me through kind of where you grew up, went to college, all that fun stuff.
Yeah. So grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, very passionate St. Louis, and like a lot of folks here are in St. Louis. And then, you know, went to college at Bowdoin College out in Maine. So I went to Bowdoin's a very small school. I've always loved Maine. So it was like a really fun place to go to school. Just a beautiful place. And during the summers, I skipped all the internship stuff, and I led like canoe trips and hiking trips for like a wilderness camp out in Maine, which I just love doing. And so did that, did 4 years at Bowdoin and graduated, and then always sort of thought it'd be really cool to live in California. So I studied economics at Bowdoin and then moved to California, moved to San Francisco, didn't know anyone, loved it, met a lot of great people, and I worked in the insurance business, my first job in downtown San Francisco, and that's actually where I met my wife, which was, you know, made it all worthwhile. Such a great, got really lucky there, and worked in insurance for a couple years, and then I learned about sort of the search fund model out there from a couple folks that went to Stanford and told me about the model. And this was like 2006, 2007. So it wasn't nearly as popularized as it is now. So I was really lucky to learn about the model at that time. And really got excited about being an entrepreneur. And the company I worked for was a really big insurance brokerage. I think there's like 600 people in my building. So I was super excited to be entrepreneurial. And, was kind of getting married at that time and decided to launch a search fund to go out and buy an insurance brokerage. And that was really sort of my start. And that was 2008.
That's so a rough time to start that, yeah. Right? If we all knew what was
around the corner. It was a really interesting time. But I think it ended up being like a sort of a good time to do it. There wasn't, I don't even know what the numbers are then, but you know, I did a traditional search, which is where, you know, you have sort of the traditional investors and there's a sort of formulaic, you know, model set up. And I initially had 12 people that said, we'll support you. And then I found my first deal and I went back to those 12. And this was right in the heart of the sort of crisis. We're like, we love the deal. We're only going to do half of our commitment. So I was left with a really big gap to try to figure out how I was going to raise the rest of the money. And so I ended up going from 12 investors to like 30, a lot of individuals, a lot of hustle to try to get it closed, but was able to do it.
Yeah, I hear that often that people will say, well, I've got, you know, so many people committed and they're ready to, you know, write a check if I find the right deal. And then when they do find the deal that they want to go with, it seems to be that a lot of things come up. So maybe you could help out the listeners, just if anybody that doesn't know what a search fund is, maybe just give me your kind of high level explanation of it real quick.
I think it's a way to become an entrepreneur without having to start something from scratch. was kind of how I looked at it, because I didn't have an idea or some novel product that I could sell and start up. And so I figured, wouldn't it be neat to go out and buy a really Main Street vanilla business that had already, you know, gone through all the startup stuff and was already existing and making money, and go out and buy it from someone that was retiring. That was sort of how I looked at it, or be a perpetuation plan. And it just made so much sense to me. And so that really is what, and so the search, the reason why it's called a search fund is, like, you know, you search for a period of usually a couple years to try to find the business. And, you know, you're in a traditional model, you're sort of, you get some funds to search. In the self-funded model, you don't take any funds and you sort of just do it on your own. But usually you take a couple years to find something, and you're calling and looking and emailing people and having breakfast and sending people notes and trying to find any way to find someone to sell their business to you. And then when you end up finding the business, then you sort of work on, okay, how am I going to raise money? How am I going to get banks to look at this? And that's like the part two is closing the deal.
Great. So you were in the Bay Area at that time. The insurance company that you kind of started with and got your start in the industry, worked there, kind of got your feet wet, learned what you thought you knew, and then decided to raise some funds and then go buy a business. So the first one that you acquired, where was it located at?
So my wife and I, who I'd met when I started working out there, I was telling her about this search thing. She's like, that sounds crazy, but she was on board. And I sort of said, let's pick 10 cities where we'll focus. And we knew we were going to move there, and we were open to moving anywhere within those sort of 10 cities. And she was like, okay, cool, we can do those. So I picked all these cities on the West Coast and Denver. And as I was moving east, like, of course, St. Louis, and maybe Chicago. I think maybe that was as far as we'd go. And, randomly, I found this deal in Madison, Wisconsin, which was not on my list. But she was like, well, Madison sounds great. And it was a very much like a Main Street insurance brokerage, which I was just focusing on insurance brokerages during my search. I didn't look for anything else other than that. And an insurance broker is, you know, it's not the company that actually does the insurance. It's the person that goes out and finds insurance options and gets quotes and organizes them on behalf of the insured. And the insurance brokers get commission, and it's a very steady, you know, you get, it's very highly recurring revenue. So this business was in Madison. I think we had like $5 or $6 million in revenue, 20-25% EBITDA margins. There were two brothers who were looking to kind of perpetuate and sell the business, and they felt they didn't want to sell to someone locally, like a competitor. They didn't want to sell to they wanted to sell to someone who could kind of come in and be, they felt like they're the son or someone they never had to come in and run the business, which was perfect for me. And my goal and what I was excited about is I knew insurance, but I didn't know that. I knew the big insurance stuff, but I never ran a business, or I didn't know that particular, world of insurance. So I had to come in. I knew I had to learn under the seller, and so it was perfect for me to kind of come in and take it over and do that. And that was in 2010.
Great. Okay. And so when you structured that deal, how did you do it? Did you have seller carry? Did you do cash finance? How did you set that up?
So this is the first time I've ever done a deal. And I was leaning really heavily on people that had gone before, like mentors and advisors. And there was a couple people who were really kind of walking me through the whole process. We didn't do any bank debt. We did a structure, and it's common in the insurance world to, you know, do 60-70% guaranteed upfront purchase payment, and then the remainder in the form of an earnout. And the reason why it's common in insurance is because the sellers really control those relationships. And so you really want to incentivize them to stick around for 2 or 3 years. And if they just walked out the door, these relationships that they had built and reason why clients were sticking with them, that could be in jeopardy. So we set up an earnout payment based on, you know, how the business would perform over 3 years. and I had a little bit of seller note, and that was it. It was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it makes it a little easier. Obviously, you know, being on the debt side, you know, the amount of things that you know hurdles you have to get over, it makes it a lot easier doing it that way. So, kind of looking back on your first deal, is there anything that you would have changed as far as like when it comes to negotiations or the structure of it?
You know, I don't know. I think that if I think about how I felt when I was going through the deal, I desperately wanted it to close, and I really was trying to make sure the seller, I knew that I'd found a good deal for a good price, and I was very worried internally it was going to fall apart. And so I think during in those negotiations, I don't want to say like a complete softy, but I was like, okay, we can do that. Or yeah, we can do this. Cause I was so concerned that I would say something or do something that, the seller would say, oh, the deal's off. And, you know, I had this window of a couple years and we were already starting to get excited, and this is common with searchers. So I think in hindsight, I probably could have been a little bit more firm on some things that, you know, I acquiesced to at that time. But I think that's just all experience and probably confidence. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the deal was able to get done, and I was happy with the result. But I remember just being so nervous I was going to push too hard on something, and the seller wasn't going to move forward, or we're going to go with someone else.
Yeah, we hear that a lot in the search world. Yes. Yeah, in the search world, it seems like, you know, you have the issue where somebody's been searching for so long that they're kind of like, next deal that comes up, I'm just going to like make it work. You know, I feel like, I guess you could kind of compare it maybe to dating, where somebody's like, I'm missing the window to get married. I better just marry the next person that comes along and, you know, Hail Mary, hope it works, right? So that's probably something you kind of figured out.
I think what's interesting for me, at least in that deal, was that was kind of how the dynamic started between me and the seller. Me sort of being more, you know, giving and acquiescing on things, more flexible. And I think that continued on once I had bought the business and the seller needed to stay there to keep. And that led to, I think, what was probably not a healthy relationship those first year or two with the seller. Mm. Because, you know, I'd been so like deferential. And then when I got in, I'm like, okay, we need to change it. And it was just sort of, so I think like if I could have set the tone of our relationship better earlier, it would have carried through and it would have worked out better throughout the deal. And so I look at that not only like in different points of negotiation maybe I missed on, but also after closing, working with the seller in that relationship, it wasn't balanced. And at some point I had to say, guys, like I had to sort of put my foot down, and that caused friction and issues and all those kind of things. So I think very common. But especially for sellers to stick around, but it was something that I probably could have done a better job at.
Yeah. I think it's always tough. You're only talking to the person for a couple months, and then all of a sudden you're like, we have to almost partner on something. And, you know, relationships are tough, even after knowing someone for years. So it's difficult when you've only got a couple of months, and then you've got to try to sit there. And then when you have money on the line, it's even more difficult.
So, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's crazy. So how long did you operate that business before you said, hey, let's go do this again?
So I ran that business for 5 years. So from 2010 to 2015, and a lot changed during that 5 years. In the insurance world in particular, it became very popular for private equity firms to start buying insurance agencies during that, really around that time. And because they're like a recurring revenue, good margin, asset light, highly fragmented business industry, lots of insurance agencies out there. So the multiples really went up during that time. And we all felt, you know, heading into 2015, like, you know, hey, this is seems like it's a multiple's gone up. We've got the business going on the right track. You know, it's been 5 years. Typically with a traditional search fund, you know, you probably say 5 to 6, 7, 8 plus years is sort of the time frame where the investors sort of start to want to see some return of capital in some form. So in 2015, we ran a process and went out to a lot of strategic brokerages that we thought would want to buy us. We got some good offers, and I felt good with them. And I felt like the team that we'd built and all the momentum, I felt like the one we ended up selling to, everyone was super happy, and they felt like, hey, this is going to work out great. So it just was like a win-win, and it was the right time. And you know, it was that's kind of how that went. And similar to how I had to do, I had my person do an earnout. The buyer of that company that I owned, the first one, it was called Murphy Insurance Group. They asked me to do an earnout to stick around for 3 years. And so that was a big part of it, was I got to really make sure I like these buyers, that, you know, I've got to, you know, demonstrate that I'm excited about the business, which I was, and that I was excited to stick through it. And I think that was a big part of it. So I sold in 2015. And then had an earnout period for the next 3 years where I stayed on and helped them kind of manage the business.
That makes sense. So we don't get a ton of sellers on the show. So, you know, I'm interested to ask a couple quick questions about that.
Yeah.
So, from a seller standpoint, if you could tell a seller something or give a piece of advice, you know, regarding the sale, what would be kind of the best piece of advice you could give a seller?
Oh, you know, I think it's, you know, find the right partner, find someone you're going to kind of align with on your values, be prepared for some emotions. You go from naturally like some excitement, oh, I sold and it was good and we accomplished something, to sort of another emotion, which is like, oh man, you know, I sold and it's no longer like, it's no longer my thing.
Yeah.
And I got this boss now, I got a call and, you know, do a conference call with about the budget. You know, you never had to do that before. So
yeah,
it's emotional. I think you got to kind of be ready to kind of ride those waves, and it's only human nature. And then sort of after a few months, you sort of start hitting your groove again. But I definitely went from feeling really great to kind of down, to having maybe some regrets or seller's remorse, to, okay, I can do this. And I think you kind of go through the emotions of it all, and you got to kind of know that's going to happen. It's only natural.
Yeah. And, so kind of ride the emotions.
Ride the emotions.
And just know they're coming, I guess. Would be,
yes.
You know,
yeah.
Something exactly. Sad. So, all right. So you went through the sales process, you yep. did the earnout. And then at what point did you say, hey, I want to go do this again?
So I started feeling like at that time I was in my, you know, mid 30s, and I still felt like I had energy to be an entrepreneur. I just sort of felt that I still had it. I was like, I think I can still be an entrepreneur. I felt like I missed the excitement of being an entrepreneur. I missed the edge. I missed a little bit of like, maybe it's the risk. I'm not sure, but I missed it. And I felt like, I was like, you know, this can't be it. I kind of asked myself that. And I felt like I'd also learned so much operating that first deal that I felt like I could apply it to something new and move a lot quicker and do things better and hopefully avoid some mistakes. And so at that time I sort of surveyed the landscape and I was thinking about what would be a right fit for me. And I decided to do what's a self-funded search where I was, you know, not going to get investors at the outset. And I was going to sort of start thinking about trying to find another insurance brokerage, probably much smaller than the first one I did, that I could buy. And the goal I'd also thought for me personally was I felt like the sale process sort of interrupted. It was a necessary thing of the way I raised a traditional search fund, but it interrupted what I thought could be a lot of growth. And I still had a lot of conviction of that. And then you sell. Right in the middle of it. And I felt like this next thing I did, I wanted to sort of set this up and set like a foundation where I could run it for as long as I was still excited about things and healthy, and my family was excited about me doing it. So that was why I chose to do more of the self-funded model where I had total control and independence in this next thing I did. And I could use the experience that I had with the, you know, great board and the structure of the traditional model into doing a self-funded model. So I started kind of hatching these ideas during the sort of earnout period. And I started thinking about it. And when the earnout period ended, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go out and do this. And I launched a self-funded search in, and I really was targeting St. Louis. I was in Madison, but I wanted to come home to St. Louis. And so I really picked out like 10 or 15, 20 potential targets here in St. Louis, and really not a lot, but because there aren't a lot of them here, but, you know, did breakfast and met them and worked, you know, and found one. And what's interesting is I felt like the second time around, I've heard this from a lot of people, the second time around, the search is much easier. And I don't know why that is. Maybe you're just more confident. Maybe you know how to be more productive, but it was a much easier experience, the whole thing. And I, you know, I found what's now Oberle, like 2019 time period, and moved back to St. Louis and started going on this new project.
Yeah. It's interesting that you kind of bring up a way of searching for the business now, you know, on a typical kind of business acquisition where you're not considering it a search fund, or, you know, a lot of people are kind of doing a self-funded search, right? When the way that they're looking at it, you don't hear a lot of people that will kind of cold call or work their network or try to find a seller directly, right? A lot of people are going on Biz Buy Sell or going on, you know, certain sites to look for something. How difficult was that to kind of identify the sellers and then reach out to them almost cold calling?
Yeah. You know, both of the deals I found were proprietary deals, not brokered. And I knew in the industry I was looking at, if it was a brokered deal, I would have no chance of competing. The roll-up shops were paying such a high multiple. It was just like out of sight. And I would call bankers or brokers like, hey, will you call me? Like, oh, we're not going to call you. We have like our Rolodex. You're like number 30 on the list. You're only going to do one deal. We're going to call all these companies. They're going to do multiple deals. So I kind of knew the landscape. And I thought the only way I can find one is proprietary. And then I also thought, you know, boy, the only way I'm going to get someone to want to sell is I got to build a relationship. And it's going to take some time. It's going to be like the old fashioned way. And I've got to have someone like really want to partner with me and meet my family and like get to know me, and totally opposite of what a roll up private equity approach might be. I've always been in sales. I should add that I have a sales background before I started searching. And so I have no shame in cold calling. I love cold calling. I don't mind getting hung up on. I don't mind the rejection at all. And I'll just call someone so many times. And then they finally say, oh my Lord, like, I can't believe it's the 50th time you've called. I'm like, I know, I just went out to breakfast. And they're like, fine. You will break through.
Yeah.
And one no is closer to a yes. So I really don't mind doing that as long as I felt like I had a good targeted list. And I knew they were qualified and good ones. I also did a lot of handwritten letters. I did a lot of, hey, you know, I'd love to just have breakfast. No, no pressure. I'm not going to like push you. I just want to get to know you. All genuine. Because that was kind of my goal. So I just want to build those relationships and get to know people. But yeah, I love the cold calling. It's been critical. I think everything I've ever done at work has stemmed from some cold call, some cold outreach, some form of, I guess, just kind of being, you know, scrappy.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to like figure it out, right? I mean, you're competing with people with, you know, kind of an endless amount of money.
Yes. But
I would almost venture to say that considering you were also a seller at one point, you kind of understood the process and you understood the emotions that go into it. So you could probably play that a little bit with, you know, when you're making the targets, because a lot of them don't want to sell to private equity and be rolled up because they want, you know, all their staff to be taken care of and their clients. Right. So, you know, I hear that a lot. I was talking to a client this morning about it, and they kind of said, you know, there's like six people trying to buy this business. Like, how can I stand out? And I told them, I said, you need to think about the seller. You need to think about what is their, you know, pain points. Can you, yeah. you know, work with them and say, hey, let's do a hold back. That would be a bonus for the employee 6 months down the road. You know, does the seller want to stick around and come in one day a week and right. just, you know, for the first 6 months or something? You've got to figure out what works for them
yeah.
and what'll get them excited about selling to you. Because there's of course sellers that just say, I just want the biggest amount of money I can right. get and we'll move on. And then there's some that say, I want my staff to be taken care of. I want my brand to live on and so forth. So I'm sure that kind of helped you out a little bit as well.
It does. I think that, you know, if someone's running a business, obviously they're not, there's a certain window where they're going to be ready to sell. And you got to be there at that window. And don't take it personally if you're calling them and it's not that window. Like, just keep calling them until the window is there.
Yeah.
And then once the window is there, like getting on a plane or driving and meeting in person is just, I think, essential. If you know it's a qualified lead, like say, I'm taking the red eye, I will be there tomorrow morning. I want to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
And it really matters. And I think it really has helped me in both the cases I worked on deals that I was like, I was there immediately in person with donuts, ready to talk. And I think that, they were like, wow, I can't believe you drove all morning. I was like, yeah, I'm here. I'm serious.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps.
Awesome. Yeah. So, okay. So we'll, you know, great information. I mean, being a, you know, traditional searcher, then selling, then also looking at doing it self-funded, some, you know, great information. We could probably talk for 6 hours about how it all yeah. went down. Now, I know you now kind of then also switched and you support the space that you were basically yeah. in and searching for a business. So when you took over the seller's business, mm-hmm. You know, I would assume it'd be probably around 2019, yeah. maybe right before 2020. Did you have that in mind the whole time that that's what you were going to go after?
I did. And I did a lot of that at Murphy, the deal before.
Okay.
And it just grew, you know, early on in like 2010, 2011, the group of searchers, we all kind of knew each other pretty well. And they would call and say, you know, I'm buying this business. August, I know you bought an insurance business. Can you look over, you know, I trust you. Can you look over the insurance of this company I'm about to buy to make sure I'm not stepping it into an issue? And so I started doing that for a lot of my peers. And I love it. It's so fun. I mean, everyone in this space is just great, generally. You know, and I love helping entrepreneurs. And if I could help those people and say, you know, you should try to avoid this or ask this or try to figure out this insurance issue before you buy the business, it really seemed to kind of resonate and it's just grown and grown and grown, honestly, just naturally to where it's a very large part of what we do now at Oberle. And so I did that at Murphy and then have just continued on here at Oberle. And it's been so fun. I love doing it. I love working with the ETA world and it, I think we're able to really help, which is really professionally rewarding.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously most of our listeners would be people that are looking to buy or sell or already yeah. entrepreneurs or thinking about it. So maybe kind of walk us through what you do when someone calls you and says, hey, I'm buying a business. You know, what do you look for? What do you help them with? Maybe give us a kind of high level idea of what you do on a day-to-day basis yeah. with them.
You know, when you're going to buy a business, you want to confirm all these different things before you do it. And there's accounting and you might want to look at the technology or the different things, depending on the type of business. And one of those things that you definitely want to look at is how's the insurance program currently? Are there problems? Will there be surprises when I end up buying the business? Are there coverage problems? Are there claims? And insurance is notorious for these insurance policies are like hundreds of pages long. And words that no one understands. And so we come and say, we'll do all the insurance review for you. We'll read all those policies. We'll summarize them for you. We'll educate you on them. And we'll present to you a diligence report before you buy the business, just so you know exactly what the insurance issues are. So you know them, you can kind of wrap your mind around them. We can talk about how to fix them. And then usually at closing, we come in and then we fix all those things that we found and maybe add new policies or subtract policies or, you know, adjust them. And then we put in place a new insurance policy at closing and you're off and running. And there's no incremental cost to using us. We don't charge for diligence. And then we end up getting compensated because when we become the insurance provider at closing, we get commissions that are sort of baked into the premiums. And usually, hopefully, the premiums are less than what they were before. So it's total win-win. And it really helps. And so we do the commercial insurance. We help out with the employee benefits. We can help out if there's like a life and key life insurance requirement, which is frequent in the SBA world. We can help out with all those kind of three insurance issues. And you know, we hear from clients out there like, oh, you know, just, you know, insurance was at the bottom of our list, August, but it was on the list and we had to deal with it. So thank you so much for just making it easy. And that's all we want. And that's what we do.
Well, in reality, you would assume it'd be at a top of the list, because if something goes wrong, then suddenly it becomes a huge deal, right? And I know, one of the crazy things.
Still people, every time I get on a call with someone, I'm like, I know you've been excited about this insurance call all day.
Oh man, that's funny. Yeah. What's a common thing that you're kind of seeing in just in business in general when it comes to insurance that maybe somebody's underinsured on a specific product, or, you know, is there kind of one thing that you would say this needs to be, you know, has shine a light on and people need to pay more attention to?
So part of our diligence, we come up and we add up all the premiums that are the insured is currently spending on insurance. You know, they'll say, okay, here's their workers' comp premium. Here they all are. And let's say it totals up to $20,000 a year. And then we do a pro forma. So first we say, does that kind of match what you're seeing on the income statement? So that's a nice check. Sometimes it doesn't at all.
Yeah.
And that can impact the pro forma. And if you have really large policies where they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, that matters. And then we also say, you know, we think the pro forma premium should be X. Because, you know, you got to add in. They don't have auto insurance. We got to add that, you know, or, you know, some people have boards and they got to add directors and officers insurance or different areas. Sometimes we find great ones like, okay, we can take all these fancy cars that the seller is running through their business and we can take them out. And they're like, oh, that's great. You know, I didn't realize that could be some savings. So there's those kind of things. And I think the biggest thing we find is discrepancies and what the sort of we see the premium being year one versus what the buyer sees it. And just having that discussion up front, usually it's not huge. Usually it's within like a 10%, 15% variance, but sometimes it's really significant. And it's so much better to know that before than, you know, going in. Now it's I could probably count on the time, like on my hands, like the number of times they've had to renegotiate a deal based on insurance expectations. It has happened. It's mm-hmm. not a ton. So it's not something like, but it's just helpful to get more precise idea of what the spend is going to be in year one. And that's what we really think is probably what I think helps people the most.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I think people, they kind of just say, well, I use the insurance agent that my parents used and so on and so forth. And then when they get to the business side,
he's great.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, I don't know what I'm looking at here. Yeah, so it's always good to have someone that can review it. So that's great information. So, all right. So what's next? You're going to buy another brokerage? You're going to roll them up?
No, I was just thinking about that this morning, actually. I think I'm having a lot of fun and Oberle's growing and we're adding people. And I'm like really into trying, you know, all the operations and rolling up my sleeves. We have 15 people. We're still, you know, we're not a huge business. There's lots to do here. And I'm excited about all those day-to-day issues and problems and opportunities. Like that's all I'm focused on. And So, and I have a lot of, I'm still like really fired up about like being an operator. I love this. Yeah. I really love coming into work. And I just think that as long as I still feel that way, I hope to do this for a long, long time. And keep growing. I love the people that are here. We have a ton of fun together. And so I'm really like feeling like excited walking in the door. I've thought about M&A, and it's just still, as far as I can tell, very expensive for in our niche insurance, for me to compete. And I think there's more opportunity just the organic way. I think down the road, it probably will make sense. There'll be smaller add-ons or maybe something we can do that would help us grow more. But I've got nothing on the radar on that right now. So I'm just kind of a boring answer.
No, I mean, it's just it's honest. If you're having fun, you still got that passion, then why go make it more difficult on yourself at this point, Cool. Okay. Well, I always ask two questions at the end. So first one, do you have a mentor or have you ever had a mentor?
That's a really good question. I've had a lot of mentors. There's two people in particular, Josh Greenberg and John Fowler, who helped me on the traditional search and got me set up and introduced me to searching. And I still talk to them all the time, and I still am running the business like how they've sort of taught me how to do it. And so that's been great. And my dad's been in insurance forever, and so he's who I kind of learned insurance through. And he's just got such a honest, high integrity, great way at like looking at issues and solving problems. And he's one of those guys just with like just an incredible reputation. So I really try to harness that and aspire to be that way. So he's obviously super important for my career too.
Yeah, that's great. It's always awesome when I hear that.
Yeah.
Okay. Final question. What motivates you? I mean, you've obviously been successful. You've moved on both sides of the country back to the middle to Wisconsin. I mean, you've met your wife in college. You've bought a business. Yeah. You've sold. Bought another one. I mean, what's motivating you?
You know, I think everyone here at Overly is having a lot of fun, and I want to make sure it's like so great for them. That they all become so successful and have these awesome careers. That's really motivating and fun to see. I also, I'm competitive. I love competing. Mm-hmm. I love being in the game.
Yeah.
It's really fun. And I enjoy battling it out with competition, thinking about how we're going to win. I hate losing, but it's like part of it. So all of that whole competing process, the game, I love it. And it charges me up.
Awesome. Yeah, some great answers. So where can people find you? I mean, if you've got somebody that wants to take advantage of your service and hopefully use you, where can they find you?
You know, you can always email me or also our website. We've got like a great, a pretty simple way to like kind of click on it, and it goes right into it. It'll come right to our team if you have an opportunity. Oberly-risk.com. That's the best way.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
It's been great having you on here, and hopefully maybe we can catch up again soon and we'll run into each other at a conference or something.
Absolutely.
But it seems like you and I are on so many different panels all the time. We run into each other one way or another. So it's been great.
I appreciate you coming. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you found this podcast informative and helpful. Please don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. For more information, or if you'd like to discuss a transaction, please go to www.jaredwjohnson.com.